Welcome to episode 626 of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is a Valiant Sunday episode, and Jesse and I are going to be talking about a couple of the books that have come out recently that I've seen quite a few people online talking about, so we wanted to give our takes on those, namely Bloodshot Rising Spirit, number one, and also most recently Ninja K, number 14, which is the final issue of that series. So we're going to talk about those, and then we'll also give some thoughts about the upcoming Shadow Man 10, which I think is actually the penultimate issue of that series. So that one's coming to an end also. So all of a sudden some of these, the best titles Valiant are producing coming to an end. So not sure exactly what's going on there. So we want to discuss. So thanks for joining me as always, Jesse.
Oh, it's always a pleasure to be here, man. Let's do it.
All right, let's start with Bloodshot Rising Spirit, number one. Let me give the creative team really quickly. This is a story by Zach Thompson and Lonnie Nadler. The script is by Kevin Grievous. Pencils by Ken Lashley. Finishes, we've got Ryan Wynn with Brian Thies and Oliver Borges. Colors are by Diego Rodriguez, and letters are by Simon Boland. So before I give the quick synopsis, originally it was announced as Thompson and Nadler were doing this, and with Lashley on pencils. And then all of a sudden, it seemed almost at the 11th hour, Kevin Grievous was brought on as well. Like, he was announced as co-writing, but then they list him as scripter. So I'm not really sure, like, what's going on. Did you hear anything about why Grievous was brought on or who's going to be the writing team going forward? Do you know anything, Jesse?
No, you see, I had a good crew of insiders once upon a time, but as we well know, they've all moved on. So I'm not getting the intel as I once did. I'm sure there was some sort of timing or conflict with other projects or something to that effect. I can't imagine it was anything other than that.
Yeah, I'm wondering, because I don't know anything either, and I do have some people like probably could ask. I don't know if they necessarily would want it to be public knowledge. So even if I got the information for myself, I might not be able to share it with all of you. But I also know that Zach Thompson and Lonnie Nadler, almost right after they were announced on this, their workload over at Marvel on the X-Books like shot up exponentially. They have a lot of titles going on over there. So I don't know if maybe it was just a workload issue where they were falling behind and they just needed some help and Grievous came on. I'm not really sure. And I don't know exactly what the creative team is going to be going forward either. But we'll focus on this issue for now. And when we find out more and have issue two to talk about, I guess we'll know more. So it's interesting. So the original Bloodshot from the first go-round with the Valiant, he was had formerly been a hitman by the name of Angelo Mortali and got recruited into Project Rising Spirit. And or actually, was it even called Project Rising Spirit back then?
I don't believe it was.
I don't know.
I'd have to go way back when, but it was tied into Rye. That was the real big thing with the original Bloodshot, yeah. Was that he was the blood of heroes was what they used to make Rye, which was basically the nanites and blood from the original Bloodshot that had been passed down through the ages.
Right, but there wasn't a mystery of who. Like, there was at the very beginning, but early in the series we found out, yeah, he was Angelo Mortali, a former hitman for the mob, very experienced operator, I guess you'd say, and, probably hundreds of kills under his belt, and not exactly a noble profession, working for the mob as a hitman. And, once he discovered who he was, he really, that was kind of his motivation for being a hero as Bloodshot, trying to redeem his past. And so this Bloodshot, we hear Ray Garrison is the name he goes by. Is that really his identity or not? Never got really revealed. He chose not to look to the past, but rather just to look to the future. But then we heard with the Bloodshot movie, we heard the name Angelo Mortali. So there was, there's ties back to the original there. So this issue starts out 2010, Little Italy, New York, and we meet a man named Angelo Mortali. And definitely not a hitman, definitely not a made man. In fact, he's trying to make a name for himself in the mob, and he takes an assignment to take out a couple of rival mobsters, gets captured, goes to prison, and then is approached by a man named Cormac to have a chance to not rot in prison with no chance of parole, and is basically recruited into Project Rising Spirit to become Bloodshot. So infused with the nanites, starts going through training. There's a really great scene where these automated machine guns are firing at him, and he doesn't even attempt to dodge the bullets. He just takes them head on. And once he finishes with the exercise, after he's taken out all the automated defense systems, he's pretty chewed up, as we've seen Bloodshot in the past be able to regenerate, you know, huge chunks of muscle and flesh and whatnot. And there's a couple of the scientists there that are like, all right, we see you're healing already, Angie. And we see him kind of hold his finger up to his lips like, you know, just one sec. And he basically vomits out the bullets that the automated machine guns had fired into his body. And one of the scientists is like, show off. So that was a really, really great scene. I liked that little bit of humor they added in. A week later, he goes on a mission with several other operators from Project Rising Spirit. It seems like they're going to take out some maybe Mexican drug cartel members, something like that. And as they land, they're approaching the mansion or the compound, what have you. All of a sudden, Bloodshot seems to see somebody. Is it his younger self, Angelo Martali? Is it somebody else? Obviously somebody to do with Mortali, because he says, how's it feel to be a made man? And it doesn't really seem like any of the other operators noticed this guy, and Bloodshot pulls his gun on him. And as he looks around, the rest of his team is not there. And all of a sudden he's like, guys, and he wakes up. So everything we've seen to this point apparently has all been implanted memories. And we see he's still at Project Rising Spirit. He still has all these tubes and whatnot connected to him. And he kind of lurches up from the table he's on, starts attacking people. What did you do to me? Who am I? It burns. We see some security guys come in. They're trying to talk to him. Angelo, we're here to help. Just calm down. And he's like, who's Angelo? Who am I? They fire at him several times with their guns. Again, the question, who am I? And he kills several of them before he's finally shot in the head from behind at point blank, which knocks him out. And we see kind of the head of security asking one of the scientists, Olga, what happened here? And she says, what happened the same past two times, Gavin? The false memory implant didn't take. So he wants to know what the next step is. And she says, well, we practice till, we make it perfect. And she tells her team, you heard the man, team, the Mortali engram failed. Let's take it from the top. So for those not familiar, an engram is kind of like a brain pattern, if you will. And it seems like they're trying to overlay that on top of whoever this man is, whoever his real memories are, whatever his real identity is. They're trying to convince him he's Angelo Mortali. And I assume the reason they're doing that is because they want him to be under the thumb of Project Rising Spirit, right? They want to hold that over him, like, do what we say, or we're going to dump you back in prison to rot for the rest of your life. Who he actually is, we don't know. And it's to be continued in issue two. So I have mixed feelings about the issue. There is a lot of action, but there's not a lot of answers. And, you know, this was billed as, okay, we're going to go back and we're going to see Bloodshot when he first gets into Project Rising Spirit and, you know, kind of what his quote unquote origin is, which, you know, we kind of know he's whoever he is. He got imbued with the nanites by Project Rising Spirit. They eventually imprint him or implant the, I guess you'd say, the Ray Garrison engram seems to be the one that was used most often. But if I remember correctly from the early issues of Bloodshot, they were constantly using different engrams, different identities that they were imprinting that best suited their needs, that gave them leverage, you know, whether it was a soldier with a dead wife or whether it was a mobster who they rescued from rotting in prison, you know, whatever it might be. But I was just hoping for once with Bloodshot to not have a series where it's more questions than answers. I would like, you know, kind of similar to what Jeff Lemire did, where it's exploring who he is as a person without the background question of who is this guy at, like at his center, at his core, who was he originally? I just think at this point, either tell us who he was and give us kind of a definitive, or stop asking the question, right? Because if we're never going to get a straight answer, I'm okay with that. You know, sometimes a hero, we don't need the answer. We can just know that he's a hero. But if that's the case, then you got to leave it in the past. To keep bringing it up, it just feels repetitive. So that's just kind of my take on it. It was an entertaining issue. I thought the art by Ken Ashley is some of the best work of his career, because honestly, Ken Lashley, I run hot and cold on him. Sometimes I think his art looks great. Other times it feels like he's kind of phoning it in a way, and it's not as polished or as good as it should be. But this is top notch here. I also want to single out the color work by Diego Rodriguez, especially when they're in Project Rising Spirit. It's got a certain tone with lots of blues and grays and such, which makes it feel very, very much like a lab facility. And it also makes it feel very clinical in tone. So, but all in all, a good issue. But yeah, I'm ready to stop asking the question. I'm ready for Bloodshot to move past the whole "Who am I?" And being that this is back in his past, and it wasn't until midway through Lemire's run that he was willing to just be like, "It doesn't matter who I am." I may not get my wish. I'm kind of thinking I won't, and it will. This whole series may be a whole issue after issue with Bloodshot asking, "Who am I?" So, anyway, what were your thoughts on the issue, Jesse?
Okay, I thought it looked fine. I'm very, very partial to Louis LaRosa Bloodshot. I love Louis LaRosa Bloodshot. I like Mikko Sui on Bloodshot. But that's hard to get Bloodshot, and especially right now. I mean, it's almost impossible to get Bloodshot. So I'm okay with the way it looked. I was a little disappointed with the mafia angle. I understand that it's a bit of a throwback to the 90s. I get that, and I appreciate that. But man, oh man, oh man, I hope it doesn't continue. Because I'll tell you right now, first of all, people don't talk like that. The whole mafia thing, that was cool in 1973. All right. That was cool in the early 80s, back when every Hollywood movie, about New York was like that. That reality doesn't exist anymore. It's 2018. It's about to be 2019. The mafia, if it does exist, they're not kicking around with Italian accents saying, broad and stuff. I mean, it's ridiculous. So we got to get ourselves out of the past, because the past is dead, but that's fine. We're moving forward here. Hopefully that was just a programmed glitch in his mind, or, run mafia simulation, go, to meet a Project Rising Spirit, objective. I could see that, this has happened many, many times, and we've already seen that, everything from Bloodshot issue 1 to 25, had that frequently occur. We're spoiled. We're spoiled with the Lemire run, and we should be. The Lemire run was phenomenal. Not a single issue came out, with the exception of some of the Bloodshot USA issues. Not a single issue came out where we rolled our eyes. I mean, we liked it. Most people did, because it was well written and thought out. And I think that's what we're accustomed to. We're all hyped up on this, modern Bloodshot that is relatable, that's interesting, that has depth of character, and I feel like we took a step back with this new inception of Bloodshot, which is also frustrating, because supposedly it's the best selling Bloodshot one ever, at least since the 2012 relaunch. And to be honest, I don't know that it deserves to be, not because I don't like Valiant, I do, but because, Bloodshot Reborn 1 was better. Bloodshot Salvation 1 was better. Bloodshot 1 was better. And it's not to take anything away from this. I know that with the movie coming out, they kind of have to, Valiant right now is kind of stuck. Lemire's done. What do? They have to move forward, but they don't want to destroy everything that's already happened, and piss off and alienate fans. So, well, what do? You have a board meeting, a creative team meeting, and you say, hey, where do we go from here? And the answer is, well, let's go back before the Valiant universe that we currently know really came to be, so we can tell different stories for a while and see where it goes. And that's where they're at. Did it irritate me? No, it wasn't a bad story. I mean, it wasn't a great story. It was a meh story. And I just hope it gets better. I just do. So the jury's still out on it.
So you said there that one of the first things you said is, you know, one of the things that kind of disappointed you about it was you felt like we were moving backwards. It is going to the past. I mean, in a way, shouldn't we be moving backwards? Shouldn't we feel like this is a less evolved?
What I mean is we're moving backwards in terms of quality, in terms of depth of story. Because you had Bloodshot. Bloodshot was good. After the 2012 relaunch, it wasn't a bad. I mean, it had some hokey moments, but it wasn't bad. But it really picked up in the Valiant. And then it jumped up an extra notch once we got to Bloodshot Reborn and Beyond. That's when it evolved into what Bloodshot could be. And don't get me wrong, I love Bloodshot and the Harbinger Wars series. I mean, that was awesome. That was staple stuff. But I'm not talking about timeline. I'm talking about in terms of quality, in terms of writing, in terms of dialogue. But like you said yourself, let's see issue two. Let's see issue three. Let's see where the story goes. Maybe I'm going to put my, put my foot in my mouth here, you know, but, I feel like issue one was a setback. I want to see issues two and three take a step forward.
Yeah. I kind of feel like it was a step back in terms of the character's evolution, which, you know, that's what struck me. Like right off the bat, and I had to stop and catch myself and be like, okay, well, wait, like he hasn't been through a lot of the things that caused him to grow as a character. I have to keep that in mind. But the other part about that is the fact that, with the way the Lemire run ended, it's almost like I wish we could have gotten at least a few issues of the status quo, maybe four or five issues of the status quo after that, to kind of really firmly establish who Bloodshot is now that he's with his wife and daughter, right? He's with Magic, he's with Jesse, he's with Bloodhound, nobody's chasing him anymore, and here's the status quo. And then, because I think at that point he would have been so well established, then I think it's okay to go back and explore his origins. And, you know, it would be a step back in terms of evolution of the character, because with what happened at the end of the Lemire run and everything that he went through with, going after Magic's father and then traveling to the future, traveling to the dead side, it really kind of put him through his paces, so to speak. And now all of a sudden it's like we kind of have an idea of who he was just from what he said in that final issue, but I don't know that it was so firmly established, you know what I mean? And I think you need to have a character really firmly established before you go back and do like a series about that character in the past, right? You've got to know who the character is in the present and have a really good idea of who that character is in the present so that you can go back to the past and make it work. Otherwise, it can muddle the character overall. Would you agree?
Yeah, like let's take a look here for a second. We had Wolverine for years, right? And then they go back and they tell the story of origin. You're back in the late 1800s where, you know, James Howlett comes up and how he discovers his nature, and then how he's out in the Canadian wilderness with Rose. He's got all this going on, right? So you had Wolverine origin where it basically explored the very genesis of the character, and it goes through his growth through the years, you know, and you see him, you know, over the course of that miniseries, just go from being a small sickly boy to being the man that, you know, would one day become everything that we know about Wolverine. And so I know that you can go back in time and tell a story like this, and you can do it very, very well. It's been done before. It can be fantastic storytelling. This is an opportunity for Valiant to do that. And so I just hope that they handle it right.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that, because a couple of things. It kind of reminds me, and I specifically thought about Wolverine origin as well. But again, you had so many years of establishing who Wolverine was as a person before they went back and told that story. And, you know, that kind of ties in with the whole, what I was talking about earlier with the whole keep asking the question, Bloodshot keeps saying, who am I, who am I, who am I? That was a constant thing about Wolverine, right? Like he didn't know what his origin was, what his true nature was, and they revealed bits and pieces, and then eventually we got the origin series from Paul Jenkins, which was phenomenal. So I feel, in a way, Bloodshot is kind of the Wolverine of the Vine universe. I feel like that's the place that he holds. I mean, a lot of people compare him to the Punisher, but I think he's more integral to the universe than Punisher is to the Marvel universe. So I'm glad that you brought that up. But again, I just wonder if it's too soon to tell a story like this, because maybe he wasn't as established as he should have been after the Lemire run, like I mentioned. But to your point earlier, yeah, we've got to wait on the movie before they can go forward. And so they were kind of stuck. They put themselves in a bad position, so to speak. So anyway, I think that's enough about...
I'd still like to see Bloodshot Robot Hunter. Or Bloodshot Dinosaur Hunter. I know those are trademarked and owned by Valiant. They could do it, and that'd be a kind of like a fun little spinoff.
Yeah, they totally could have done that. All right, let's send Bloodshot to the past to hunt dinosaurs. I would have been in for that 100%. Then they wouldn't have had to worry about who is he in the present time until the movie comes out. So anyway, let's move on. I want to talk a little bit about Ninja K number 14. It's from the creative team of writer Christos Gage. We have art by Roberto Della Torre, colors by Jose Villarubia, letters by A Larger World Studios. And not to put too fine a point on it, but Ninja K quits. He quits MI6. He quits the program. He turns in his katanas and his uniform. I don't know if he gave up all his gadgets, but, after the events of the last few issues where Colin King had to basically agree to give up Livewire, his teammate, his confidant, his lover, somebody he cares deeply for. But MI6 wanted that information, wanted Colin King, Ninjak, to bring Livewire in, tell us where she is, and that's the only way we're going to give you the information about where you can find the Eternal Warrior who was being possessed by the Dying One. And so Ninjak, short on time, short on resources, didn't have a lot of choice, and he had to make that deal, figuring, I'm not going to turn Livewire in, but I'll cross that bridge when I come to it. And now the marker's kind of been called. MI6 has disavowed him, and he's attempting to, when this issue starts, get back into MI6 headquarters. He does have some leverage over them. He has all the information about the Acclamation Bureau, which was the first arc in the Ninja K series, which was absolutely phenomenal. And he's going to use that to blackmail MI6 basically into leaving them alone. Of course, that's not as simple as that. They are doing their best to stop him, to capture him, to do whatever they can to stop him. He's completely been disavowed. Seems like they're using deadly force, perhaps not. For his part, Ninjak doesn't use deadly force, but he eventually is able to fight his way inside to his handler, Neville, Neville Alcott, and Neville's like, this isn't how I wanted things to go. I tried to save you. If you'd only listened to me about Amanda, wouldn't be in this mess. But it's over my head. It's my superiors. What can I do? And so Ninjak says, what you can do is you can tell them, leave me alone, because I have copies of this. It's my contingency plan. Copy of the Acclamation Bureau files, all of MI6 dirtiest laundry in one place. And Neville's not surprised. He's like, that's treason. Why didn't you let Ninja C, who's the one who first clued Ninjak into the Acclamation Bureau, why didn't you let him release those when he wanted to? And Ninjak, I wasn't stuck between a rock and a hard place. I wasn't desperate. And the question you'd ask yourself was, do you really want to chance it? Just let me walk away, right? Just let me walk away. Neville's like, come on, how did we get here? You've done so much good for us. There's got to be a way to work this out. And Colin King says, no, we're way beyond that, right? This was a long time coming, and I need a break, because my entire life I've been a victim of one abuse or another, just being used, And MI6 continued that cycle. They exploited my nature, and I'm done. I'm finished. don't try to contact me. I'm not going to carry out your dirty work any longer. I quit, you know, and it's really interesting. There's a lot to unpack here because, yeah, it is that cycle of abuse. But at the same time, Colin King wouldn't be Ninjak. He wouldn't be who he is without the ninja program training and without having gone looking for the killers of his, you know, his mentor, his first handler, who he broke all protocols with and, you know, became intimately involved with. And eventually she became Roku. And, you know, he mastered the ability to, control his cellular regeneration and all that kind of stuff. I mean, he's one of the most powerful ninjas that the program has ever produced. And so in a way, he owes so much to the program. He was a spy. He was recruited into MI6. And it's always been a little interesting to me, that dichotomy of what he went through and what he gained from MI6 and also the mercenary aspect of him, because he doesn't, you know, he's not an agent. He is freelance. You know, they do pay him despite everything that he's, you know, been through, and at one point was, you know, loyal, and he's much more mercenary now. And we've seen quite an evolution of the character from when he first showed up in Exo Manowar, those early issues that we covered on the Valiant Chronology. But now he's done, right? Like, I can't work for MI6 anymore. And like he himself says, a long time coming. Doesn't surprise me at all that he wants to give this up. The guy's lived his entire life being abused in some way, like under the gun. Like, I don't know. It seems like he's never been happy. I don't know, like Batman in that way, right? Like, he's never smiled. Doesn't he deserve a break? And where does he go from here? Is he going to go looking for Amanda? Is MI6 just going to let him walk away? You know, we know in the Matt Kent run that he lost his ancestral home, the castle, that all got blown up. It's like he doesn't have much. Don't know how much of his fortune he has left. Obviously, the Ninjak that we know would have safe houses and caches of weapons and supplies and stuff and things stashed around the globe. So I'm sure he has places to go. But where he goes as a character from here, not sure. Where he goes as a character from here, not sure. And again, confronted with the fact that this is one of the best series Valiant's been putting out, and they're bringing it to a close. I don't really understand, although they have teased the return of Bloodshot, or Ninjak rather, sometime next year. And then the only other thing that I'll say about this issue is that just like the last few that Jesse and I have talked about, Roberto De La Torre art on Ninja K or Ninjak just does not work for me. He's a slick, fast-moving, stealthy character, and the art needs to be clean with really clean lines, and it just needs to look much nicer than this. This kind of art would be good for like crime noir or some kind of street level, down and dirty kind of character, like Daredevil maybe, Punisher maybe, but for Ninjak it doesn't work for me. It's too muddy, it's too sketchy, it's just not clean enough. Just my personal take on it. So what are your thoughts, Jesse, both on this particular issue and the last of the Ninja K series?
So I really like Ninja K. I make no debate about it. It was a very well written series. Now, that being said, I really liked the way Tomas Giorello started the series. His artwork for the first few issues just really worked well. Now I understand that they needed him for other projects and whatnot along the way, and he had to kind of, there's only so much you can do. So then he kind of messed around with Harbinger Wars 2, which was kind of a debacle in its own right. We ended up with Roberto on this issue and the last one. I haven't really liked the artwork that much with him on there. Although I will say this particular issue, I don't know if Roberto was listening to people's criticisms or whatever, or maybe just, you know, doesn't care. I don't know. He cleaned it up a little bit, and it kind of had, it still had his signature style to a degree, but it was, maybe it was colored differently. I don't know. It looked kind of like in many ways, an old issue of G.I. Joe. With a couple Roberto moments. So it wasn't as choppy as the last issue, I'll tell you that. as far as the direction it went, you know, it's a good way to wrap up in many ways, the Harbinger Wars too. This is a kind of an epilogue, if you think about it. And it's an epilogue to the Accumulation Bureau story arc. So they really did a good job of wrapping up the series as a whole. Valiant has done a good job. They're very similar to Bloodshot. They've been able to place themselves into a situation where they can buy themselves some time and kind of figure out where they want to go with the character, where they want to put them, you know. Now, some of the writing on this issue, to a degree, was kind of hokey. You know, one minute you've got Ninjak, you know, flying over the city. Next minute he's blowing up. Now he's in a gunfight in the street. Now he's agents are everywhere. Holy crap. I mean, apparently MI6 is more agents than God. Now he's talking to Neville, and Neville's all like, you know, hey, you know, we can work this out. And I'm like, are you serious? We can work this out. We just had dudes shooting at me, and I just broke a dude's arm. Are you kidding me? He just blew my plane up. No, we can't work things out. So I've criticized how Valiant has handled Neville in the past, possibly always. I don't know that they've ever actually done him well. I just don't see that conversation happening in life. And if it did, I would probably laugh in the guy's face. Are you freaking kidding me? You just blew me up in the middle of the air. I just had a gunfight with everybody in the street. I caused damage. My girl that I'm in love with basically, you know, is a wanted woman who is responsible for millions of deaths. I fought off space aliens called Armor Hunters. I served with Unity, and now we're here. No, we're moving on, bro. So I think this was something that needed to happen. I think you and I have discussed it in the past. There's a point where Ninjak really just needed to get away from MI6. That was a great origin story, but nah, he needs to move on because as a character, he cannot grow if he's running around doing, you know, Her Majesty's Secret Service any longer.
Yeah, I kind of agree with that, but I do wonder who comes next. I hope Christos Gage stays with the character because I really like his take on it. But at the same time, without MI6, and here's the thing, maybe the one aspect of Ninjak that is the toughest to nail down, that's motivation. Like, why does he do what he does, right? So it's easy to say, okay, well, he's on a mission for MI6. MI6 is handing him his assignments. Other than that, other times when he's done things, you know, personal, like go after Roku because it was, you know, formerly somebody that he was in love with. So what now for Ninjak? I'm curious, and I hope that it's done well because, as I've said before, he is one of my favorite characters. And the only thing I'll say about Neville Alcott is that I agree with you 100%. I don't think that Neville has ever been used by any writer as anything more than a plot device. And when you use a character that way, he's not going to be consistent because his, you know, his demeanor and the way he acts, his portrayal is going to change from plot to plot, and it doesn't work. So yeah, it would be nice to have somebody bring him along and, you know, really flesh him out, so that he could be handled a little more consistently. All right, last book we're going to talk about, and this is a book that comes out this coming Wednesday, January 12th, so we're not going to get spoilery at all, just give our kind of impressions, how much we liked it. It's Rag and Bone, Part 3 from Shadow Man. It's written by Andy Diggle. We've got art by Renato Guedes and Eric Battle. Colors are by Ulysses Areola with letters by Simon Boland. And the only negative I could say, and it's the same thing I didn't necessarily like about last issue, Renato and Eric Battle's art, their style is really different. And I'm never a fan when you've got two such disparate art styles in the same issue. So that's all I'm going to say about that. As far as what happens in the issue, loved it. You know, next to Ninja K, Shadow Man has been, for me, the strongest series over the last 6 months to a year, almost a year at Valiant. And I was really sad to see, just like with Ninja K, that with issue 11, which will be the final part of Rag and Bone, that Shadow Man's coming to an end. And I hope they bring it back soon. And I hope they have Andy Diggle writing it, because what he's done has been nothing short of miraculous. I think a lot of Valiant fans probably thought that Shadow Man couldn't necessarily be fixed with what had gone on before. It would have had to have been, okay, we got to kill Jack Boniface and start over with a new character, or we've got to completely scrap him somehow, bring in a Shadow Man from an alternate reality, or do something like that. Like, there's no way to reconcile the stories that had been told previously with Shadow Man. The stuff just didn't work, wasn't of good quality. And somehow, Andy Diggle, to his credit, he made it all work. And not only work, but he made it shine. He made it excellent. And I think with the characterization and the way Jack like holds himself in this issue, it's clear that he has grown and he has evolved and he has learned. And it's been an amazing journey. And not only has Jack learned and evolved and grown, so has the Loa, which is absolutely amazing and a great work by Andy Diggle. And one other thing I'll say about the art, and then I'll let Jesse give his thoughts, is I like the art individually. Like, I think Eric Battle's art is pretty solid. He does some interesting things with close-ups and where he chooses to position people in the panels, and I think it works really well. And Renato's art has never looked better, very emotional and very supernatural. So I think individually, really great art, but they just don't mesh well together at all, and it just bugged me. So what are your thoughts on Shadow Man 10, Jesse?
Oh, it's of the three issues we've discussed today, it's the best. I liked Shadow Man for the longest time simply because he was a legacy character from the 90s that I liked, you know. But I mean, I kind of had to, you know, well, behind closed doors say, man, I don't know, man, this kind of rough. And then, you know, with the exception of like Shadow Man Zero and some of the later issues that were quite impressive, but the miniseries, you know, they were bad. And then so we waited forever for a Shadow Man series to come along again. And lo and behold, here we are. And this was actually really good from start to finish. Now, there hasn't really been a bad issue yet. And I like how this issue in particular ties into the Shadow Man mythos. They talk about, you know, things that Jack has done. They talk about characters that have been peppered throughout from start to finish. They talk about the reality of that. They have growth and development for Jack. They have growth and development for the Loa. They have growth and development for the series. And so I know that, you know, here we are coming up on the end. We're not quite there yet, but we're close enough. And I feel like we have the series has been treated right. And this places Jack very similar to the way Ninjak has been poised and placed in right now in great position to launch forward when Valiant decides to break the glass in case of emergency and let Jack out again. Because we discussed this, you and I, in a previous episode when we talked about possible motivations for, why Jack had been sent back through time and why teaching him about the true nature of the relationship between him and the Loa was important. And lo and behold, here we are, you know, going right into that. And I'm very excited about that. I made my own predictions a couple of months ago when we talked about it. And I still stand by those predictions. I think it's going to come to pass. So, definitely a pickup, a very good book. I echo your sentiment on the art. I've always been a big Renato fan. I like his work. It's a style thing for me when you start clashing. And when you start mixing different types, it's just rough. And some people can do well together, but I wasn't a big fan in Savage when Louis LaRosa did part of it and Clayton Henry did another. I love both artists, but just together I can't stand it.
Yep.
Likewise, back in Harbinger War, you know, watching Clayton Crane, you know, do some amazing painting work that looks phenomenal, and then you had again Clayton Henry on the other part. I would have just preferred to see one or the other. Mm-hmm. I really do. And the same thing here. I love Renato's work, but I could have gone without it if you know, if it was going to be consistent artwork, or I could have just gone with Renato from start to finish. I could have gone with that too. That would have been amazing. It's just the blending. If you're going to blend artwork, you got to be real careful, because not all artists, match well.
Yeah, I agree. And, one other thing that I'll say both about the ending of Shadow Man and Ninja K is that, a lot of this might be ending because of the incursion event that's coming up. We've learned a little bit. It's an invasion by, a woman that it's like a psychic invasion, so to speak. And, they might be ending these. Valiant likes to keep the number of titles down to about, 5 or 6 a month. So, it's very easy to pick up their whole catalog. And I totally respect that. Comics are expensive. I understand that. And it might be that these are coming to an end now. So the incursion event can happen and, tie-ins that we very well may see. I hope we see Shadow Man and a Ninja K show up there, especially Shadow Man, because Andy Diggle is co-writing the incursion event. He has a very good take on Shadow Man, obviously. But the one thing that I worry about, right, is let's say Shadow Man doesn't really play a big part in incursion and Ninjak doesn't show up at all. And then these two characters are picked up sometime later next year, 2019, by new writers. I really don't want to see any of the progress that was made on Shadow Man and, to some extent, progress made on Ninjak thrown out if new writers come in and all of a sudden, well, now they're going to tell their story and, they're either ignoring or they're walking back on things that Christos Gage and, Andy Diggle did because, they both have these characters in really interesting places. And in the case of Shadow Man, in a better place than he's ever been before as a character, in the Valiant universe. So, And to some extent, you could say the same thing about where Jeff Lemire left Bloodshot. There's not as much danger there, obviously, because the Bloodshot Rising Spirit, Project Rising Spirit title is set in the past, so you don't have to worry about that. But it's always a worry with comics that the next writer is going to come in and throw everything out and change everything so that it fits the story that they want to tell. So that's up to editorial to make sure that doesn't happen. And hopefully if these characters do come back, they'll come back with the same writers. Cause again, I feel like Gage and Diggle really get these characters and I've loved their take on each of them respectively. Anything else you want to add, Jesse?
No, it seems like, with the way that Valiant has set things up now between Shadow Man, Ninja K and the ending of Bloodshot Salvation, they have really positioned themselves in such a way that they can doing comics with the current staff and creative team that they have now moving forward. A lot of these projects and titles had been started under the previous regime, and so they kind of as a publisher needed to see them to closure and not destroy the intellectual property along the way. I think they've done for the most part, a good job with that. Although there were certain questions with Harbinger Wars too, but and whether you love the New Faith miniseries or not is a whole different story. But I think they've positioned themselves in order to release a number of titles in the next 1 to 2 years on their terms, and I'm very excited to see how that goes, where that goes. I will be reading them because that's what I do. And I've got my fingers crossed for success.
Yeah, I agree 100%. And I think next Sunday we're going to be talking about Bloodshot Rising Spirit number 2. So you won't have too long of a wait to see what we think of the next issue. At least, preview. It'll be spoiler free, obviously. And also Livewire 1 we have coming up as well. We should be discussing next week. So once again, we want to thank everybody for joining. Please tell your friends about us. Subscribe and rate us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or whatever platform you use. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on Apple. Also, all past episodes of the podcast are available on all those platforms as well as at lrmonline.com. While you're at the site, please be sure to check out all the other pop culture coverage of your favorite and upcoming movies and TV shows. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes as well as follow all our convention coverage. So once again, we want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.